welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 437. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello.
Hey, man. Back from GDC. Oh, a couple of weeks now, I guess. No, yeah. Actually, just a week? A couple of weeks?
No, it's 2 weeks, I think, now.
Okay. I assume you've gotten over all the lag and everything?
Just about, yeah.
Can usually shake it off after a couple of days, but sometimes it sticks around forever.
I had horrible con flu once I got back, probably from the airplane or something, but I was just dying for about 3 days and it was the worst thing ever. But I'm fine now, so that's the important thing.
Good to hear. Those of you who've ever been to any kind of convention, doesn't matter what it's about, it does mean being locked in a warehouse full of like thousands of people for a couple of days and you inevitably come back with the plague. We used to try and carry around things like those little antibacterial hand wash thingies, which is great and sensible, but also looks well passive aggressive when you shake someone's hand and then like furtively pull out a little bottle of gel to disinfect them against your filth. You can't believe you touched me.
I have one and I always take it with me, but I never actually use it because I always just forget.
Oh. And then you just shake people's hands and then you lick the palm of your hand. Oh, no, I forgot. Oh, I've got the plague.
Yeah.
Such a shame. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. We didn't have a show last week, as we mentioned the 2 weeks beforehand, with the bank holiday weekend being one thing and me now being 100% more married than I was on the last show. It would mean that we wouldn't necessarily have a show that week. We'd try to get something out, but in the end, it just didn't happen, evidently. So apologies for the brief bit of radio silence, but we are now back and ready to roll. We're going to have Rick's breakdown of GDC as part of our interview section this week, as promised before. We're going to go through a few of his favourite ones. Plus, we've got a ton of news to deal with, including the likes of NetEase, the creators of Rules of Survival, getting well and truly sued by PUBG for reasons that should be fairly obvious at this point. We've got ourselves a release date for Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery. We'll fill you in on that. Firewatch is heading to the Switch. Good news indeed. Plus, new releases this week, including Fortnite is finally out and live. We've got games like Trickshot 2, Ava Airborne, Pillars of the Earth, and more to cover. But first, let's have the news. Before PUBG actually appeared on mobile in its official form, and I do mean like only about a month or so beforehand, as if they knew, we had a bunch of companies releasing PUBG-style games, these Battle Royale games onto mobile. The most successful and noteworthy of which, I think, was NetEase's games, one of which was Rules of Survival, and the other one, which I actually haven't played and I was unaware of till now, is called Knives Out. Which, and you were telling me about this before, apparently in China, because they're a Chinese company, they released a Terminator game which was themed around it, right?
Yeah, I can't remember if that's true or not, but they definitely have a Terminator game.
Okay.
That is a Battle Royale game, and gotcha. Knives Out, I'm fairly certain, is just a reskin of that, so...
Without the Terminator branding.
Yeah, so Knives Out is basically a reskin of a clone, which is quite interesting in a lot of ways, but...
No truth in this art. So many steps away from the real thing. And PUBG Corp, as they're known, the original company is called Blue something, isn't it? Blue Hole, yeah. They have not said anything until now. And let's be clear, there have been an avalanche of these Battle Royale-style games on mobile. Everywhere, really. I mean, Fortnite was the original one where it was added as a mode, wasn't it? Battle Royale was thrown into Fortnite. Mm. And it kind of became the default mode that everyone plays.
Mm.
And they didn't say anything. I think, obviously, they bristled a lot, going, oh, copying our game. But it's only now they've decided to take it legal. And what it is they are suing NetEase, which is the company behind it. And I think the only thing we can figure out as to why is one little bit in the branding. Because we've been discussing this, and it's very difficult to copyright game styles, game genres.
Yep.
Because... if you look at any first-person shooter after the release of Wolfenstein, and Doom, people used to call them Doom games before they were called FPSs, which is the Doom game.
Huh.
And it's very difficult to be like, well, every single first-person shooter should be able to be sued by ID Software. Because that genre didn't exist beforehand. And it was like, oh, it's a game where you shoot a person with a gun and there's a hand holding a gun in the bottom of the screen. So everyone gets sued now. But there's a point at which it crosses over and kind of becomes a genre rather than like a clone.
Mm.
And then it's like carte blanche, everyone can kind of do them. And I mean, Gears of War is a good example, I suppose. Gears of War really nailed that and popularized the cover shooter thing.
Yes.
So third person perspective, chest high walls. And then every game from that point onward had chest high walls. And even Horde mode. Remember then when that was a thing for a while?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so Gears of War had Horde mode, where it was just like, right, we've got 5 minutes, they're going to keep coming, and the waves are going to get harder and harder. And then that suddenly appeared in every multiplayer mode of every game after that. And again, the problem with it all is the legality. Like, is it illegal to copy a lot of this stuff? And apparently, it technically isn't, in the same way that apparently it's very difficult to legally trademark a recipe. Like, whoever came up with the recipe for, like, spaghetti bolognese, whoever came up with the idea of putting tomatoes with beef, couldn't be like, right, that's it, that's my recipe, no one else is allowed to make spag bol, apart from me. That doesn't really work. The thing where they may have tripped themselves up here is, apparently, NetEase used the phrase PUBG on phone in some of its marketing stuff.
That's just stupid, really.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing where surely somebody in, like, the legal department at your company goes, hang on a minute, lads. Let's maybe not use the other people's game name in our own marketing material.
Yeah.
Someone's going to get a bit annoyed about that. Like, surely.
You can copy all the mechanics, you can copy the style, you can copy the genre, but don't actually say PUBG on phone, because... That, you can argue, is misleading. If you're a consumer and you don't know anything about the game, you might think PUBG on phone, oh, this is from the PUBG guys, and this is their version on phone. Hey, fantastic. When clearly it isn't. So that is apparently one of 25 violations which the Chinese studio has cited, or has been cited against the Chinese studio. It's 150 pages of this lawsuit. I haven't read it all, Rick. I'm going to come clean with you. But, yeah, it could go down. And we don't know whether it's just a little bit of, like, trying to scare smaller companies into not copying your stuff. Because, obviously, lawsuits, even if you don't win them, or don't lose them, rather, they're expensive for all parties concerned.
Hmm. I think if they were going to attempt to frighten smaller studios, surely they'd sue a smaller studio. NetEase isn't exactly a tiny studio. They make, like, $2.3 billion every quarter, like...
Yeah, they are absolutely huge. You may not have heard of NetEase so much or be aware of them in the West. They make loads of games which you may have played, but the name isn't, like, synonymous. Like, it's something like Rovio or Supercell. But no, they are absolutely huge.
Like, this is a fight that's going to go on for a long time if NetEase want it to.
Yeah.
Because they have the money to pour into it. Or alternatively, they'll just settle and it'll all go away. Because they have the money to do that as well.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how this is going to go. It could be a huge, long, drawn-out thing where NetEase try and fight their corner, or they might just quietly just pay PUBG
out of court.
Yeah, which would be a totally legitimate way to do it, because their games are already making tons of money, so why not?
And it's kind of a fair cop as well. Like, they've got to hold their hands up and say, yeah, you probably got a point here. We know exactly what we're doing. You know, they can't be like, oh, really? I had no idea. What's PUBG?
What's, like, kind of more hilarious to me, though, is the fact that they've even got a more egregious clone currently in beta with Fortcraft.
That's theirs as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so close to Fortnite, but also, like, and it's the same, it looks the same, it's taken the same art style and everything. And so far, Epic haven't really said anything.
I would love Fortnite. I'd love Epic to try and sue them and be like, excuse me, copying our very unique game. And then, like, PUBG taps Epic on the shoulder again. Excuse me, what? Very original game, is it? Like, and everyone goes and backs down and sits in a corner. And, sorry, can we, let's all just play our various Battle Royale shooters and have a nice time.
That would be years of legal fun. I would love to just watch unfold.
Oh, God. So, yeah. I guess it doesn't really have any impact on us whatsoever, because these clones are going to keep on coming. But they might be trying to shut down any smaller studios from daring to try, because let's face it, they're not going to be able to pay the legal fees if anyone has a go at them. So we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens. Now then, we've been following Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery for a while. You've seen the trailers, you know, all the voice cast, loads of people, actual people are coming back. Michael Gambon is back as Dumbledore. I thought he was dead. Spoilers. Okay, fine. I think it's in the lead up. I think this is pre-Potter in the timeline. Is it?
Yeah.
This is Emily's terrain, really. She's the the Potterista or whatever.
Come she back, Emily. We need you at this moment in time.
She isn't here, by the way, because she's at her folks' place at the moment without a working microphone. But she will be back next week, so don't worry. We'll have her returning to the fold. But I can say that this game will officially be coming out April 25th. So we're looking at 3 weeks from now, from today roughly. Ooh. It's actually been out in soft launch for quite a long time, and there are already a million videos of it all over the internet. But you will be able to get it certainly on iOS, and I think it's going to do the day and date thing with Android as well.
Are you excited?
I am indifferent! Because, I mean, to be fair, like, it does look pretty slick. They have poured a bunch of time into this, evidently. Because we've seen loads of spin-offs where they're just, like, these static screens, you know, portrait games where you're managing nothing and just a bunch of menus and, you know, it could be that. It's not that. They've tried to go for this fully interactive go-to-lessons and a big long-form kind of RPG. There's lots of story, and as I say, they've got the real cast in and the likenesses of the characters are good. And so it's not a half-assed thing from what we've seen, but I still haven't played it. And I'm not, like, mad into the Potter. It passed me by a little.
Well, good news.
Oh.
I have just noticed that it is now in soft launch on iOS.
Oh, snap.
So if you wanted to, you could go play it right now. I don't know where it is in soft launch, but I just got a notification now, so.
Well, it's been in soft launch in various territories for a while, but I haven't downloaded it. If it's in the UK, I might, or US, I might bother, because you've got those accounts, and I'll give it a bash. However, I would be more excited by this if I hadn't already played it, completed it, and loved it. But if you're a Switch owner, get hype, because Firewatch is coming to the Switch. The official announcement came from Campo Santo. Did you play it, Rick?
I have played it twice, I think.
Oh.
And it is magnificent.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's so good. It's just, there's so many little things that you can do or not do, and then you can tell somebody else, oh, I did you throw the radio in the lake? Yeah. Genuine question, like,
yes.
But you can choose not to do that, and it ever so slightly changes little things, but it gives you a whole different feel to the story, I guess. It's as it unfolds. No, Firewatch is just one of those games that if you haven't played it yet, you absolutely have to, and if it's on Switch, then you've got no excuse not to.
Yeah,
it's now basically available on everything.
It is, so. And it's one of those things that's it's described as, but also, you know, dismissively so, as a walking sim. That genre tends to come with, like, as a walking sim, as a negative connotation. But there's actually more going on in this one, I think. I feel like there's more interaction. You are funneled in set directions. There is a certain amount of exploration, although, you know, you can only really go a few places.
Yeah.
But the story angle is very, very strong. If you've not played it, you basically play a guy who's gone out to work at a watchtower for the summer because he's trying to get away from life and some negative stuff that's happened to him. And the game is you talking to a lassie who's in another watchtower across the way. You can just about see the watchtower itself in the distance, but that's kind of the communication. It's all done via radio. And you're exploring the area, and stuff happens and goes down. And it's a beautiful looking thing. I'm sure you guys have seen it running. It's kind of like it's not low poly art style, but it's got that slightly cartoonish look to it, but in a very pretty way. And it's all about atmosphere and conversation and building this relationship with this other person, and then keeping the place safe and exploring the area. And I got really tied in from the beginning, which begins with a little text dump at the top of it.
Oh, yeah, that was so great. I didn't expect it to be a text adventure. And then I was like, oh my God, it's like,
Yeah,
I almost feel bad about ruining that, because it's such a good intro that you're expecting this big explorationary walking sim thing, and then it's just like, no, we're going to funnel you into this thing to help flesh out your backstory first.
Yeah, and it really sets the tone, which again was slightly unexpected. I was like, oh, is it this kind of game? Oh, I didn't realise. But I think it's a great thing. It's one of the best of those, along with Gone Home, and I think I really liked. And I quite liked What Remains of Edith Finch as well.
Oh, that's a great game.
In the same category. We've had some good ones recently, these walking sims. Like, going right back to Dear Esther, which I was quite on the fence about. I was like, this one feels a bit borderline, like, nice environments, but it's slightly pretentious. And that slightly got my goat, whereas Gone Home really won me over with the feeling that it was more claustrophobic and almost a bit spooky, Gone Home, I felt. But really liked it. So yes, this is an exciting thing. You should get hype for it. And for all you know, you could be wandering through the woods playing Firewatch wandering through the woods.
Don't do that.
Well, it's,
you'll
it's
probably
horrible.
Walk into a tree and then you'll smash your Switch and then no one will be happy.
Oh, no.
You got to think about these things, James. It's all well and good saying, oh, the Switch is so portable, you can take it anywhere. But if you actually took it anywhere, you know.
I'm playing it in the bath and there's nothing you can do about it. Shush, Rick. Okay, so in lieu of the interview this week, we're going to be doing our full GDC preview with Mr. Rick Cowley. We're going to find out, once again, it's going to become a regular section, what makes Rick tick, parentheses, at GDC 2018, close parentheses. So, Rick, you saw lots of games when you were out there. Was it a broadly good thing?
Yes, I think I've never been to GDC before, and I've also never been to America before. And it was weird and interesting and wholly unlike anywhere I've ever been.
Big, innit?
Yeah, it's big. It's kind of like walking through London, except in London you occasionally turn a corner and go, oh, there's an old thatched cottage or something like that. Yeah. Whereas this, you turn a corner and go, oh, the sun is now blocked out because every single building is about 100 stories high.
Yes, it's kind of like what you imagine from like a big city in the UK, only like plus 30% bigger.
Yeah.
Everything, the roads, the cars, the shops, everything's just supersized.
And it's on this massive bloody hill that I had to walk up every time I wanted to go back to my hotel, so that was not fun.
We've picked out a few games that you think are the tip-top ones, what you did see.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with, I've got them all here, let's start with Vandals. What the hell is Vandals?
Vandals, to put it very loosely and... to not really give it much credit, is a Hitman Go-esque game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Go series kind of thing. I go with Hitman Go because it's the only one I've played. But it's... so it's basically you have to traverse a series of grid-like areas, and your goal is to get to a certain location in each one where you can then spray paint on a wall and then exit without being caught. So there's a little bit more to it than the traditional Go series, because you have to actually get somewhere and then get out rather than just get out. You can also, when you get to the wall, you get to design your own tags and stuff. And I'm not an artist, so I was just drawing smiley faces, and it looked like crap. But the guy who actually, one of the developers was there showing it to me, and I saw him just sort of idly messing about with it, and he was pulling off some really like great-looking stuff. So it's simple but robust is the editor. And it does these little things where it'll have, like, the paint drips and stuff when you do it, so it looks like realistic street art while you're making it. Which is, it's a nice little touch.
And the environments, because I'm looking at some screenshots, they seem to vary quite a lot. It's a quite minimal art style, that, as you say, like, block colours and stuff, but I've got one here that looks quite film noir-y, and then something here that looks a little bit more 80s. Are you, like, jumping around frames?
You jump it out different eras and different places in the world. So I think I played something like 70s Berlin, and then you jump to like 80s New York and this kind of thing.
Wow.
So there's a lot of variety in that kind of thing. And each world has its own different elements to it. So I think New York, you could jump into a manhole and appear on the other side of the map kind of thing. And in Berlin, I think there was a lot more broken bottles for like distracting people.
Right, because so, you're trying to do all this stuff on the sly, aren't you, and avoid, what, like, street cops or something?
So, yeah, the cops follow you around, and they've got a cone of vision, which you can sort of see, if you're looking at screenshots now, you'll see red lines and blue lines.
Yeah.
And if you walk into the red lines, then they'll see you, and they'll start chasing you down, and if they meet you on your line, on your dot, then you lose, basically.
Got it.
But being seen by them doesn't immediately end the game, you can still carry on, but, yeah. And there's a really cool mechanic, I think, where when you finish tagging... the noise of your spray paint immediately alerts everybody to your position.
Oh, nice. So you get the panic end.
Yeah, and like every single time, they will know where you are and they're coming straight for you. So you've either got to sort of plan your escape before you've even done the tag, or just kind of run around and try and get out of there as quickly as possible. So there's a lot of different elements to it, which is really cool. And if you're interested in street art in general... there's collectibles throughout that will teach you the history of street art and its various variations and how it grew and changed. And I think that's part of why you jump around different cities and stuff, is because it has different movements and different elements like that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on in it.
That's kind of neat. And I saw from your preview there that it's actually out next week and is premium.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot about that. I'm really looking forward to playing it. So it's... $4 or £4, and it comes out on April 12th, and hopefully we're going to get a copy of it and give it a good play, because I reckon it's going to be very, very good.
I will take a run at that. That's very much down my alley. I do like those Go games, and they've gotten more sophisticated over time beyond the Hitman ones. Lara Croft was quite vertical, and then Deus Ex, it splintered off in a few more directions, basically, with that one, and with the hacking stuff.
Yeah.
But no, they're very good. And again, this is another thing. We've seen a few different versions. One of the movie tie-ins for one of those really crap, like, movies starring The Rock. What was the one where they're all in skyscrapers? I can't remember. San Andreas?
San Andreas. Oh, right.
I think there was a movie tie-in for that, and it was the Go-style game, and it was, like, quite good. I was really surprised. It was not the game I was expecting. But again, this is another one where it's like we've seen a lot of imitations of the style popping up. And at what point are people like, hey, these are all clones, or this is kind of close to becoming its own genre now, I think. Because it was originally based on, it's called Lara Croft Go or Hitman Go because of the Go board game.
Yes.
So that's the original inspiration. So it was already cribbing from something that previously existed. So I don't think anyone can get too cross and claim ownership of it. But yeah, Vandals is the name. I'm interested in that one. We'll definitely cover it next week. Moving on, same developer or same publisher.
Same publisher, yes.
So Homo Machina.
Homo Machina. This one is kind of, they started talking a lot about art and some old guy called Fritz Kahn, who apparently popularized infographics and stuff. So when you see, like, lots of nice art to explain a difficult topic, that he's kind of the guy who invented that. Because all his old drawings and stuff, there's a very famous one that I can't remember the name of, and it's in German, so... He made these drawings of the human body and represented it as a factory and all these different workers inside it.
Yes.
And that kind of thing. And this is kind of a game version of that.
So you're looking at like a cross-section of a human being, but instead of there being bones and organs, it's like a factory inside with loads of little workers operating what would look very nice, like old-fashioned 1940s things with steam indicators and levers and stuff.
Exactly. And you're just kind of left to your own devices. So there's a story and you're this guy and you wake up and it's date night. So eventually as you progress through the game, you when I started playing it, it was the very first part of the game. So you smell some coffee and you go, oh, we've got to go find out what that smell is. And then you have to go to the nose and you have to clear up his bunged up nose so he can smell the coffee. And then you've got to go to the mouth and make sure he actually drinks the coffee without choking and dying. And then you've got to eat a croissant as well and all this kind of thing. It's these very basic sort of things, but they're broken down into their like tiny little parts. And you've got to poke about at the world. There's no indication of what you're really supposed to do in a lot of the cases. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of encouraged to just jab at things and hope it works.
To be fair, jabbing something and hope that it works is pretty much my attitude to my own body, so I think I'll get on with this just fine.
And the other good thing about it that I noticed was it's not laugh-out-loud funny, but it's gentle humour. And obviously, because it's so surreal, it really doubles down on the surrealism, so it's very silly and that kind of thing. So when I was playing it, I had a massive smile across my face the entire time. You know, the idea of exploring someone's body is actually kind of gross and weird. And I'm worried about how far date night is going to go, if I'm honest.
Oh, yes. You're going to have to prime the midsection at some point, aren't you? You know you're going to be doing it. What's the mechanic for releasing levers and pumping the primer switch or whatever?
Yeah, so...
It's going to happen.
Yeah, but, you know, it'll do it in a very nice and gentle way, I'm sure, and I hope.
That one's May 17th, we're getting that May one. 17th. So a couple of months to go before we have that.
Yeah.
So Homo Machina is the name behind that. Now, when I was asking you, like, what you should talk about, you thought about it for a bit, remembered those, and then suddenly went, oh, Dragon Ball Legends.
Dragon Ball Legends.
What's the deal here?
So, Dragon Ball Legends is a portrait brawler, so you hold it, it's all designed to be one-handed.
Yeah.
And you hold it in your hand, and then you tap with your thumb to do basic attacks, and you can swipe around to move about the arena, and you can, like, dodge your enemy attacks and stuff like that by doing it. And then you've got these little cards at the bottom, which you have an energy bar that fills up over time, or you can charge it quickly at the expense of not being able to do anything else. Mm-hmm. And then use these special moves to launch certain attacks. And then you can combo those cards together as well. So if you've got enough energy, you can just set up a string of attacks and you can just melt your opponent's bar, which is pretty fun.
This looks like, certainly from the screenshots and what I've seen, it seems to have a lot in common with those kind of easy access brawlers, the Marvel Contest of Champions and that sort of thing. But having it with a one-finger control is I guess that's actually quite a good idea, because usually we're so used to playing this in landscape with a fighter on either side.
Mm.
The way they've done it here is that, like, your character is, like, facing away from you, and he's largely in the foreground, and your enemy is kind of facing you in the background. More like a Pokemon matchup.
Yeah, that's actually a good way of saying that. Yeah. So the controls are a lot simpler. I've played a lot of the sort of side-on traditional brawlers on mobile, and I've never really got on with them, because there's just so many different controls to do. Whereas this one, it's just swipe with your thumb, attack with your thumb, that kind of thing. You can do it all with just one thumb, and it feels great. And it, like, in motion, it's fantastic. Even, like, on the online multiplayer, because their big thing that they're trying to sell is that it's, like, online, real opponents, anywhere in the world, very low latency.
And, wow, okay.
I was playing it with somebody sat next to me on the online bit, and there was a tiny bit of lag. But, you know, it was very early days still. It's going to be several months before it actually launches. But they showed us them playing it against somebody in Japan, and it looked smooth as anything. The first time we saw it, it looked amazing, and then they showed us the second time, it looked awful. So you know that they were doing it for real. It was kind of reassuring to see it doing kind of badly.
Yeah, yeah, because it lets you believe it, because so many of these kind of previews, you do wonder how much of this is in the can and not actually,
exactly,
you know, rendering in real time or actually happening.
But seeing it actually happen and the slowdown and stuff, and it didn't look bad, it wasn't an unenjoyable experience. It was still fun to play, but there was obviously some lag and stuff. But they'll work that out, there's several months to get it on, to get that sorted. But yeah, it just feels right. Like, there's no real way to describe it without actually just giving it to somebody and saying, just play it. It feels good. It looks amazing.
They've gone for that full 3D thing, haven't they? Where it's like almost like those console games you've seen a few of, where it is full 3D, you know, obviously imitating the anime style of it all. It does look class.
It looks amazing. It plays amazing. And I can't wait to actually get the full game and see, like, what they do. Because they're promising different story modes and different alternate solo fighting stuff on top of the multiplayer stuff, but all we really got to play was a few battles and stuff, so I think this is going to be big. I'm putting my full force behind it, as this is going to be a big game, particularly with Dragon Ball fans. Like, this is probably the Dragon Ball mobile game they've been waiting for, and you can put that on the box art, I will take my fee, thank you very much.
Because of all of our journalist kickbacks that we really do get. We're not all massively poor and get no money for this. Okay, so a couple of months before we get Dragon Ball Legends. Finally, the one I was interested about when I heard of it, and you've now had a quick bash. You've played the Westworld game from the folks behind Fallout Shelter.
I didn't get to play it.
Oh, okay.
But I did get to watch somebody play it.
Right, closest.
Which probably wasn't the best way to do it, if I'm completely honest, but it gave me a good look at what's to do, because this guy had a few things unlocked and was just sort of tearing through various things.
Right.
So when you look at Westworld, James, this game, what do you see? What was your first thought?
Well, my impressions was, it's well Fallout Shelter, because you've got the above ground stuff, above the vault, which is what it would be in Fallout Shelter, which here is the town in which Westworld takes place. So where all the androids are wandering around doing their thing. And then, as in the TV series, you have the inner workings of the stuff. So basically the hub that is running the theme park town. So it's all dudes in the labs, it's all the people looking after the droids themselves and controlling the narratives and all that. And they are stashed in the bunker bit of Fallout Shelter beneath the ground. How do those two bits interact? Are you mostly focusing on the underground stuff?
You're actually mostly focusing on the town, which is the big shift from Fallout Shelter. It's made by the same people, it's being developed by Behavior. There's some crossover in how it works, but basically your main focus is actually on the town and your people in it. So it's still a focus on people, but it's less about base building and more about sort of running the experience of Westworld. So you start off and you've got sort of one location where people will turn up, and you can build more as you go along and get the right resources and stuff. And then you need to create your hosts, which are the AI which wander around Westworld. And then you sort of send them in, and there'll be people there, and they'll go, oh, I want to do some gambling, so you'll need a gambling AI for them to interact with, and you need to make sure they're a high enough level. They have different, like, compatibility things, so you might have a gambling AI, but you might also have one who's a grifter or something, who's not quite the same, but he'll still work, because it's the same sort of family. Right. And then they can be good, evil, or neutral, and they've got different hats that they wear, and if you've got a matching affinity on that level, you'll get a bonus and stuff like this. And these, the hosts, you can level up in all different ways. It's kind of more like an RPG than it is a base builder like Fallout Shelter was. And you can go super deep with it. Like, there's all different stats and stuff that you can build up to like increase their romance skill or their grifting skill or their violence skill and this kind of thing. You spawn different AIs which will have different attributes and stuff like this, or you can get ones that have multiple things and can do multiple different activities. There's a lot going on, and watching someone else play it for half an hour wasn't really the best way to understand what the hell was actually happening.
Well, the thing I'm interested about is that Westworld is quite a dark show in its tone.
Yes.
And, you know, what they're talking about is quite grim stuff about agency and about using a slave class. And obviously it's got a lot of nudity in it as well, which here is just done by... They are nude, the hosts wandering around underneath, but it's kind of just very crude graphics. So they're not showing anything that might upset censors or anything like that.
Yeah.
But they say in their blurb that apparently they are wanting to focus on some of the darker stuff that happens in the show.
I asked about this, and the kind of the darkness that they're going for is more going to be in text and stuff like that, and the story it tells and behind the scenes and that kind of thing. Because obviously in the whole thing of Westworld is that people go there and they do whatever the heck they want, and if that's murder or sexually assault people, which is grim and horrible, they can. And in this, they've kind of stepped back from that a fair bit. I was just like, can you do that kind of thing? And they went, let me show you. And they showed me, like, a romance thing, and there's someone wanting, like, sex. And all that happens is that the two cartoon characters meet, they have a little love icon, and then they collapse behind a sofa, and you don't really see what's going on for the next half hour.
Right. So it's a bit Simsy in that regard.
Yeah, they kind of hint at it, but it's not really explicit.
Because
there's only so much you can do, really, on a game and get away with.
But it makes sense.
It's definitely not going to be a family-friendly affair. Even with the cutesy graphics and stuff.
Well, even Fallout Shelter had dark elements just because of the nature of the game. You know, when people do start to suffer and die and you haven't got enough space to fit them and you have to turn them away at the vault and all that kind of stuff, it's not like violent or gory or anything, but it is quite grim when you're building this society and it starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
You know, the subtext is quite nasty in some cases, especially that using all the women as breeders in Fallout Shelter. It's like... This is a bit, you know, a bit dark.
Yeah, so it's gonna have all those elements in it, I think. But obviously, like, cutesy graphics and more focus on RPG elements and leveling up people and stuff like that.
It's in soft launch and has been for a bit, but apparently it's April. So the new season 2, is coming out later this month. And so this should appear to coincide with that. So you can keep your eyes peeled for Westworld. Out and about this week, biggest new release, I guess, is Fortnite. We've already talked about us playing the soft launch version of it. There's a video on AppSpy at the minute covering it. We are going to be doing a review, I'm certain. Rick, we're going to be doing a review, right?
Probably, yeah. I don't see why we wouldn't.
Figured as much. So that will be taking place, and someone's going to have to play it for a long time, as with the PUBG one, in order to get a handle on it. And yes, we're going to have to decide which one we prefer, because it's all about lists and... things being better or worse than other things, because this is the internet.
You have to take sides. Not everything can be good.
No,
one of them
has
to be bad.
One of them is going to be the best game ever, and the other one is going to be total trash, straight in the bin, because there's no grey areas in my life, Rick. It's just superlatives or people getting smashed for being dreadful. So, check out the videos we've got. We've obviously got a bunch of coverage, and the review will be coming very, very shortly, and we will determine whether it is the Battle Royale game you want to play on mobile. Though, apparently, according to the stuff we've been tracking, because obviously we have an idea by what articles are getting hit on the site, without going into too much back-end detail, it looks like you said PUBG is doing very, very well.
PUBG is... It seems to be the top thing that everyone wants to know about, so...
Yeah, so we'll see how Fortnite fares on the mobile landscape. Other stuff that we have played this week. So I have had a go at Pillars of the Earth.
What is that?
So it's based on Ken Follett's novel. I used to think it was Follett, his name, but no, it's Follett.
Ken Follett.
Yeah, but he writes a couple of different types of novels. He does straight-up thrillers, and he does historical stuff. And this is the latter. This is a historical story based on his best-selling novel, Pillars of the Earth. And it's 12th century England is the setting, mm-hmm. and it's all based around the building of a cathedral or a monastery or something like that. And you are a stonemason and his family, and you're having to try and build this cathedral whilst dealing with the hardships of being a peasantry and other, you know, things that roll in and around. This is all presented like a point-and-click adventure. So classic kind of Monkey Island type stuff. But visuals are fantastic. The whole thing looks like you've stepped into a painting of the era, which is a really nice touch. It all starts out... I mean, the closest comparison I have, I guess, is the Banner Saga in terms of the art style.
Ah, cool.
And it has a slightly grim tone as well. It even starts off in the snow with the family sitting around just trying to light a fire to make soup and find some water. All of the interactions are kind of what you would think. It's all, you know, putting items in your inventory and then dragging the items onto objects in order to interact with them. And if you ever played a point-and-click adventure, you'll be right at home. I haven't played enough of it to determine how good the story is, but for it to be based off a best-selling novel is quite a nice touch and gives you some hope that it will be quite well written, quite interesting. And it's all voice acted. It seems to be done fairly well. And yeah, $4.99, I think I'm going to do a video of this in some form, because it is a lovely looking thing and it deserves to be shown to folks in their faces. So cool. Go and have a look at that. Trick Shot 2, you've played this as well, haven't you?
I've had a quick go on it. Yeah, it's pretty nice actually.
So get the ball in the box
while dodging other things. Yeah, I really like it. It's very, very simple. But it's mm-hmm. very, very quick as well. So as soon as you fail and you can see that you're failing, you can just try again.
You just put your finger back on the screen and go, nope.
Yep, I'll try
Let
that
me
one
take
again.
That again.
Thank you. And as well as that, even if you get it in without touching the box itself, it's got to land yes. in that to get the perfect score. Even if you get it in and it bounces around a bit and you don't get the perfect, you can just immediately, without having to hit a retry button, try again and just do it again and fire it in some more.
Which is... the right way to do these kind of games.
Absolutely.
It?
It's so... Well, it runs a bit slow on my iPad Mini 2, but the bits where it runs, it works and it's beautiful and it's fast and it just keeps you going through. And every time you win, you just go, right, next one. And you're just more than willing to keep going and trying different variations and stuff like that.
To confirm, it's done via the slingshot pullback mechanic. You probably guessed already because it's a mobile game where you're flinging something. But yes, you get a little area, a little box where you can put your thumb and then pull back and go ding, and just try and get it in the box. And it is. It was fun, and I fired through about 12 levels without really thinking that I should stop. You know, you just get yep. It's always satisfying to do that stuff. It's a premium game as well. £2.99, $2.99. You can go and have a look at that now if you fancy. What else have we got here? We've got Ava Airborne, which has just been reviewed on the site by John Monday. I've only played a little bit of it. And it has a lot in common with the classic kind of auto runners, only this one's the Endless Flyer. And it handles in the way that all these games do, where you put your finger on the screen and the, in this case, Ava, who's flying along in a kind of hand glider.
Ah, right.
And so, yeah, tap the finger on the screen and she'll go up, release, and she'll gradually drop down. And that's how you do it. And you're supposed to aim to hit balloons and stuff that will give you bonuses. There's lots of flying, like, blimps and things that you can bounce off the back of. But obviously, there are also obstacles which you need to avoid. There are laser bars that appear in a kind of jetpack joyride style. And it's very kind of sweet and indie-ish and lots of pastel colours and everything. I think John gave it an 8, so he thought it was pretty good, broadly liked it. But yeah, just keep on flying, keep him in the air. It's free to play, of course. I don't know how they're monetizing it, though. Curious.
I haven't
yeah.
checked it out yet, so I no. cannot say, but I probably will now that I've seen the review.
Yeah.
And it looks very nice, as you say.
It's pretty. So that's available on iOS only at the moment. However, now appearing on Android, even though it's been out on iOS for a while, is Paco 2, which is the getaway driver game, which is actually kind of fun. I played a bunch of this when it first came out on iOS, yeah.
I've still never got round to playing any of the Paco games, and I probably should. They look quite nice.
Yeah, first one's decent. Second one's, I think, better. And it is essentially just like top-down, you know, three-quarter angled, 3D game. You are just auto-accelerating, you're tapping left or right to steer, and it's basically the bit where you get a cop rating in GTA, the game.
Nice.
It's just that bit. So you're constantly on the run. You're trying to move between locations indicated on the map, and you just have to head towards the arrow, grab the thing. Often you're picking people up and dropping them off and stuff. But all the time you're getting pursued by loads of cops, and you just have to try and dodge them and see how long you can survive.
Cool.
And it's fun. It's slick and it works really well. There's a video on AppSpy and a review on PG. But now if you are on Android, it's free to play and you can download it for yourself as well. A few things I haven't played yet, I don't think either of us have. Simon the Sorcerer 2's turned up. Speaking of point-and-click adventures. So, I don't know if you might be a bit too young for this.
Is it a thing?
It is a thing, Simon the Sorcerer. Terry Pratchett. You know Terry Pratchett, the author?
I'm aware of Terry Pratchett, yes.
All the Discworld stuff. So, Simon the Sorcerer is one of his creations.
Right.
And it was a point-and-click adventure that appeared in the 90s, again in the vein of your Monkey Islands and all that stuff. It was available on, I think, PCs. It was available on the Amiga CD32.
I don't even know what that is.
It is a console that I owned, where it was one of the first disc, as in CD disc-based consoles.
I didn't even know Amiga did those. I thought they were all, like, cassettes and stuff.
Cassettes. It was floppy disks for the Amiga, not cassettes. You're thinking of the Commodore 64.
My first console, right, was the Mega Drive. So don't start with me on...
I hate you so much right now. There's a good reason, though, that you don't know that the Amiga CD32 existed. It's because it flopped so hard and I think contributed quite heavily to Commodore collapsing and going bankrupt. It was a rubbish thing. It only had a few games and they were terrible. But Simon the Sorcerer was available on other consoles and it's fun. So it's riffing on the fantasy genre. It's making fun of a lot of Tolkien and you know, all those tropes. I don't know quite how well it's aged. I haven't played it in about 25 years. So we'll see. But you can get it £3.99, $3.99. Broken Sword and all those games have appeared subsequently on mobile and done well. So think of it like that. It's just another one of those with a bit of a sense of humour. I think that pretty much covers it for this week.
Wait, can we talk about one more? Is there time?
Oh, go on then. What is it?
Can we talk about Bang Dream Girls Band Party?
I just spent about 2 hours on this game. Go on then. What do we feel about Bang Dream?
I'm interested in what you think about it, if you've been playing it for that long, because I put about 10 minutes into it, and I think this is probably for me. So I'm kind of interested to see how it goes after 2 hours.
Well, so... Yeah, it's what I was impressed about, because there's good stuff in this, right? Mm-hmm. So take those Japanese interactive novels that you get, where it's just like, you know, still frames of anime girls on the screen and then text underneath and you're talking to them. And it's always just girls, only girls, obviously pretty girls. And you're chatting to them and they go, and all of that.
That was spot on. That's
what they do. And... It is ostensibly a rhythm action game dressed up in the garb of an interactive Japanese style novel. Mm-hmm. And you do actually play rhythm action things. So imagine the Guitar Hero or Rock Band thing where, you know, icons traveling down the screen, hit them with your thumbs when they hit the line on the bottom. Lots of J-pop. And all that. And... Once you've done those bits, it then kicks back to like a guitar store. And the idea is that you're the band, you're these five girls, and you're supposed to be working your way through competitions. And there are these four other bands, which you eventually get to know and start to play as. And so there's a lot of conversation that goes on between them, which is the novel bit of it. There is also the kind of management area where you level up each individual band member as well by using these tickets that you earn through play. So there's a kind of RPG thing going on in the background, as well as the novel story stuff, and then the rhythm action game. So there's A, quite a lot going on in it. It's quite deep. Mm-hmm. B, the interactive novel stuff is actually very good because the characters are fully rendered 3D characters rather than being those still frames that you get where they just change expression.
They use the live 2D technology, which has been used in quite a lot of visual novels on PC and stuff, where it's the thing where it looks like it's 3D because they're animated.
But it's not quite.
But it's not properly 3D. I think it's probably the first time it's been used on mobile, actually, which is kind of interesting.
It's properly effective, you know? Like, it's really impressive. So, good production values, and the rhythm action bits, very good. So there's a lot to appreciate. Bad side, it's free to play up to the nuts. So there are five currencies, and there's stuff I immediately hit where they're like, no, you can't just earn these, you have to buy these ones. You have to use the premium version of this currency. You're like, what? Okay.
Oh god, yeah. I was looking at that with the gacha where you have to use paid gems into certain ways. Like, oh, that's
tough. And I was like, I've got gems. I'm like, no, you didn't pay for those gems. Give me the money.
They're not real gems. I was like, none of it's real gems. Just let me gacha. Let me get some more characters. Come on.
And it's all for outfits and that kind of thing, which is the other bit where I roll my eyes slightly, because yes, it's another one of those fantasy a million pretty girls giggling at you and doing what you say, which, you know, that's par for the course for the genre. So I am like, yeah, all right, fine. But it's not all bad. There's good stuff going on in there as well. From your 10 minutes, did you just play and go, yep, I'm well into this?
Yeah, I was I've downloaded it twice because I was playing it on my iPad and then I thought this is too big to do the actual button presses. So I re-downloaded it on my phone. And it's way better because it's a lot smaller and you can do it and actually hit the buttons and stuff. But yeah, no, it's very... The actual writing itself is very stupid anime nonsense, as you would expect. It is actually based on an anime, so it's got... I think it's got the writing team behind that on it, probably. They usually do.
Yeah, they've got links to actually watch the thing in the game if you want.
Yeah. It's on Crunchyroll. I really should watch it. And yeah, it's... from what I played, it seems like a lot of fun and a lot of silliness and... Usually in a Japanese game, there's about 10 different menu screens just to get to, like, level up one small thing. So there's going to be plenty to do and dig into. So yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
Well, it's all right. I'm playing Doki Doki Literature Club at the moment. So, you know, what can I say? But I'm playing that.
That's not an anime game.
Exactly. I'm playing that because it's kind of flipping the anime game tropes and then making it really, really dark. So I like that. But yeah, you play your cute fluffy band game. Have fun. You reprobate. That'll do for this week, then. Slightly longer one this week, but we hope you enjoyed hearing about all the new things that are coming up. We will be back next week, as always, possibly with Emily in tow. And in the meantime, go grab one of those games. Check out PG and AppSpy, as always. Rick, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Do come back in future.
I will.
Good stuff. And we will see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.